When we look at the development of the experience of meditation as a whole, so you know, what exactly are we doing with our minds, with our attention, as we try to develop meditation over time? And so with the practice that we're trying to develop, you know, as the weeks and the months go by, that essentially you're looking, one of the key principles is you're looking at a retraining of one's say personal attention, you know, the mind's attention on the meditation say object of one's choice. And so, you know, all of you are well aware that we, you know, we use our attention for different things when we're working, driving, you know, sports, you know, hobbies and interests. You know, we all have to focus the awareness, the attention of the mind in order to become like aware of things, you know, thoughts, feelings, and ideas. And so with this aspect of the mind that we focus on, the breathing meditation, or you know, practicing the loving kindness, or walking meditation. There's many, many different types, but it's a matter of bringing one's focus, one's attention in, say, like one place, and being able to hold it there for, you know, reasonably long periods of time. You know, say at least 5 minutes, you know, 10, or even 30 minutes a day if you've got time. And you know, it's not always an easy thing to do, because your thoughts and your feelings are going to essentially, you know, like slow you down and hinder you, because you know, because our brain has got a cerebral capability, and we have like many ideas and attachments, you know, many different types of feelings, and this activates and gets the mind thinking excessively. You know, you know, we can have, say, like an emotional experience which may be a little bit too, say, intense for our liking. You know, we may be under stress, we may be under demands and this type of thing, and we're looking for a way to sort of quieten our minds and reduce potentially the emotional turbulence when we're, say, under, like, we're in a, like a pressure situation. So this retraining of attention, the way what it allows you to do by holding your mind's attention in one place for seconds at a time, for minutes at a time, that you develop this kind of stability. It's an emotional stability over time. It's a quietness, a silence in the mind, you know, as many months go by. And you know, essentially you're developing this as a skill, you know, like a training in attention, where, you know, where you're actually being able to sustain and hold attention, you know, during the meditation process. So you know, naturally, your personality, your makeup, you know, when you first come to practice, your mind might be a little bit too busy, and you know, one has very, very strong feelings which can be disturbing. So by not allowing the mind to just go, you know, to any kind of idea, thought, concept, any kind of personal experience, you know, it could be like 5 years, 10 years ago to you know, right up to yesterday morning, you know, that a lot of this material that we think about is not actually it's not necessary for you to think about. But if we're in a situation where you're under stress, you know, this could be family pressure, you could be incredibly busy, you're just racing around, and you've got all sorts of things to think about. But if you're able to develop the meditation as a skill, that as soon as you finish your work duties, your personal activities, then the mind goes to a state of rest. And what I encourage people to do is to have, say, like the peacefulness side of the practice and the wisdom side of the practice in balance. So when you need to engage and you need the mind to work, then you can get the mind thinking, investigating, planning, organizing, you know, anything you need to do. And then as soon as you finish with the business that you're attending to, then you just basically allow the mind, you know, after your personal activities are completed, then you allow the mind to go to like a state of rest, you know, like a natural resting state. And you know, the vast majority of people can develop this. I mean, it may take, you know, some time, well over several months, or even maybe 12 months for some people, you know, depending on your ability. But it's quite useful in the sense because, you know, you don't need to think as much as you do. You know, like, even with the monks or the nuns, you know, who live a meditation-based lifestyle in the forest monasteries, I mean, 90% of what you think of is just absolutely unnecessary. It's just excessive busyness or distraction or this or that. And you know, so it's good, and plus it actually disperses mental energy. And so, you know, the more peaceful the mind is, the more energetic the mind tends to be, the more resistance you've got to stress. And you know, you're able to maintain this sense of balance and composure to a greater degree, regardless of what's happening both around you or inside you. But there's all, you know, you've got the main meditations, but also there's other little techniques you know, that you can use. So, you know, for a person who's incredibly busy, I always recommend this one mantra per minute. You know, you choose a mantra of your choice based on the changeability principle, you know, flowers, trees, feelings, thoughts, ideas, concepts, plans, people, personality, behavior, nature. You know, all these things are changeable. You choose one mantra based on a changeability principle. So like flowers are changeable, you just do it once every minute, every 60 seconds, and you do it all day and night. And you know, it's very, very light, very, very spacious, but you do this for like a couple of days and then you'll see what it can do. And for anyone who's really interested in meditation, who wants to get good results in meditation, it's well worth doing. And you know, you eat in like 7 days, you'd be surprised just how quiet you can get your mind just with this very relaxed, spacious kind of technique. So what we'll do now is we'll start with a loving kindness meditation for at least 1 to 2 minutes, and what it's based on. We'll do a combination of loving kindness, compassion. And loving kindness is based on radiating positive, positive friendly feelings, even say loving feelings for oneself, depending on the context. And compassion is based in freedom from, painful feelings, painful experiences, emotions, and could be responses, reactions to just life in general. So a classic example would be, may I be peaceful, or may I be happy and free from, could be say irritation or jealousy, could be free from sorrow. You could have lost your like a close family member. Peaceful. Could be anything. Peaceful, composed, and free from separation and concern over the loss of my dad. You know, so you know your emotional makeup, and you know exactly what words are important to you. So, you know, loving kindness is based on radiating positive feeling, compassion based on freedom from pain. So an easy one is, may I be happy and free from, could be free from anger. And if anyone has irritation, anger, jealousy, and then you get this composite kind of experience. So we'll do that. I want you to do that just quietly to oneself, just slowly, continually, say for 2 minutes. or so at the most, and then we'll switch to the breathing meditation, and I'll talk you through it as we go along. So with the beginner's instructions, just get yourself in a nice comfortable position, your back straight, head upright but comfortable. Make sure you've got nothing tight around the waist, wrists, the throat, and it's good to have your hands together in one's lap, because you're drawing the energy inwards. If you have your arms and legs, you have your hands and your feet all over the place, you'll actually feel the energy circulation in the body. It like disperses, it tends to move out. But if your feet are touching, even your ankles are touching, or especially the hands are touching, the energy circuit you get a better circulation of energy in the physical body, which improves the meditation. So just choose that mantra, that positive mantra, which is suitable for you, and just repeat that slowly, just quietly in the mind for the next 2 minutes. so we'll move across to the breathing meditation now. So I'll keep it nice and simple. So towards the, say, the roughly the first half of the meditation, we'll focus on the, say, the abdomen as you're breathing in and out of the body. You'll feel the rise and fall of the abdomen. So, say roughly about, say, 10 minutes, we'll focus on the rise and fall of the abdomen as you're breathing in and out of the body. And then the last, say, roughly about 15 minutes or so, we'll focus on the breathing, say, like around the mouth, which is a much more sharper, but, you know, still quite distinct, you know, very, very easy to track. So just as you breathe in and out, just focus on those feelings. As the abdomen rises and falls, I want you to focus on those feelings with the rise and fall of the abdomen as you breathe in and out of the body for the next 10 minutes. Those people who can't even, say, feel those sensations in the abdomen, just breathe a little bit more deeply, a bit more forcibly, so those sensations will be a bit more pronounced for you to focus on. So now we'll focus the, we'll bring down the focus of attention to a more narrow range. So what I want you to do now is focus on the feelings around the mouth. So focus on so the lips, the tongue. The reason I do this is because the feelings really, really stand out, and especially for beginners to intermediate, you can follow those sensations usually quite easily. You know, if you go to, could be like, you know, say the nose tip, or if you go too fine a point, some people just can lose it, but with this you should be able to follow it fairly easily. So just focus on the feelings around the mouth, because you'll see the breathing, the sensation of breathing will be right on the edge of that point. And do that for the remainder of the session, roughly about a bit less than 15 minutes. So if anyone feels a bit tired or sleepy, just take nice, deep breaths, slow, deep breaths, and to increase your alertness. if your mind is a little bit too busy and you're thinking too much, just try to understand those thoughts and feelings. Just explore them, you know, where the thoughts and feelings come from. Could be different situations, different people, and there's a reason behind this kind of, so like emotional thinking process. And because the more you understand about these things, the easier it is for the mind to relax and let these things go over time. So we're coming towards the end of the meditation, so just see if you can see any difference in the peacefulness of the mind. I'll ring the gong 3 times, you can open your eyes when you're ready. anyone have any questions on the meditation at all? Just in and out through the nose only, because you'll be able to feel the breath on the periphery, and so that's you'll find, because it's best if once you get a handle on the meditation, it's always good to use the sharper focus, because if you go very broad, if you go to the tummy, you go to the full chest, or you even watch the whole body, it takes a lot longer to get peaceful. But if you go, most people can't focus on the nose tip. Maybe for probably weeks or even months, comfortably. But that zone there, just around the mouth, most people can follow that without difficulty, and it won't take so long to get peaceful. But you just breathe in and out of your nose. Yep.
Any suggestions as how, if you're in any kind of pain or discomfort, how to
What I would do is, so for example, you've got pain in the shoulder or the arm. Initially, I'd focus on the pain for at least the first couple of minutes, because naturally the pain in the body could have a genuine physical basis. But what happens is when you focus on the pain. And you just have this kind of attitude of like relaxing the pain, and because when you focus on that area, you're not only placing your attention there, but with your the way your chi flows in the body, that you're actually drawing your chi to that area as well. And with some, like any experienced qigong practitioners will tell you that pain arises in the body when the energy flow is disturbed, say like in the meridians. You can have a genuine physical injury, but also the flow of energy in that area is going to be disturbed as well. So it is possible to relax that area, increase the energy flow, increase the ability to heal oneself. But and one thing you can also do is you can explore it. So for example, if I had a really bad shoulder, I just try to relax it, and another little technique that some people might find useful, which I've never done, is you breathe in and out of that area. You could say, for example, as you were sitting there, you can have this kind of mind state where you're actually breathing in and out of that zone. Everyone can feel the tummy, they can feel the sensations around the nose, the mouth, but it's just this, you can have this idea, and I've heard people say this, I've never used it myself, but I've heard people say they've got good results out of this. And so it's a way of your mind working with your physical body. You breathe, if you've got a bad shoulder, you breathe in and out of your shoulder, and the reason it works is by placing your attention there, you're increasing the flow of chi and the energy flow through the meridians, and you're developing this kind of mind state where as you breathe in and out of the shoulder joint where the pain is, that it's got this kind of releasing effect, like a relaxation releasing effect, because sometimes sometimes people can have even mental, explain it, like physical pain and discomfort in the body can also have a mental component. The mind can be partly responsible for discomfort. So for example, if I'm under extreme stress and then I start to get abdominal cramps or pain in the stomach, and it's affecting my digestion, and I get acid stomach and all this kind of stuff. I can use the same principle again. It's definitely quite different, but sometimes these things will work because you develop this kind of relaxation, releasing kind of attitude. But you just put it to the test, you see if it works. And another one is you can try explore it, just focus on it gently for at least several minutes, and then try to come to an understanding of what this pain is about. You know, what's the if I use this kind of reflective process initially. This is in relation with this focusing technique that I read this book about 25 years ago. But some of the principles that this lady recommended, this lady Eugene D. Jellin, who was a professional psychotherapist, but she must have been a Buddhist and a meditator. I read most of the book. I must have read the book from start to finish because it was a very, very good book, but it's really, really useful. And she uses the power of the mind to heal the body. So what she does with her technique, in a nutshell, she's got this 6-step process. And the first step is you just focus on that fear, on the shoulder joint, or any pain in the body. It can be pain in the foot, the knee, the tummy. You focus on that discomfort for, I'd give it at least a full minute, 2 minutes, and then, you know, describe that feeling to yourself. You know, my stomach is tight, cramped, uncomfortable, tense. And then as soon as you make that first description, awareness, and then you focus, you stop thinking about it, and then you focus again for at least another minute, and then you explore it more deeply. You know, this feeling, how does it affect my physical body? How does it affect my mind? Well, you know, it affects my physical body in the sense that, you know, I can't, I feel stressed, I feel uncomfortable, I can't sleep at night. You know, there could be all sorts of symptoms coming out of this thing. And then after you've investigated for the second time, then you stop, and then you focus your attention again for the third minute. And then after at least 1 minute or so, and then you explore it again. So you keep moving, and you go more deeply into it. You do things how did I do this in the first place? How did I injure my shoulder? Exactly what were the dynamics? You know, was I lifting something? And was I moving in the wrong direction? Was I trying to carry a weight which is beyond my strength, beyond my personal strength, capability? And really just go more deeply into it. I'm exploring, and I'm trying to understand this experience, wherever it is in the body. And then what happens is, over time, you increase the understanding, increase the relaxation, and if it's got a genuine, if it's got a genuine, say, psychophysical basis, you get this kind of relaxation effect, because you're using the power of your mind. It could be a genuine physical injury, completely physically based, no mind component whatsoever, but you're using the power of the mind to understand and relax and release this thing. And you can do this thing very easily. You get really good at this kind of thing. You just go back and forth, and you increase the ability to heal oneself and be more comfortable with this kind of discomfort experience. So you just put it to the test, focusing and exploring. Focusing, exploring, focus, and just keep doing it. Even it 4, 5, 6 times, and watch the pain level. If you see it, it could take 10 minutes or even 15 minutes, but if you see that pain level change, then you know you're onto something, and you're getting this. You're definitely getting this kind of aha type of. I'm making some headway with this type of thing. I'm letting this thing go. But you know, each person's going to be different, but just test it and see what you can do with it. Any other questions at all? So what
do you want me to talk about?
Doug, does anyone want me to talk about anything? Or do you guys want to talk to me about
anxiety.
Something?
Anxiety.
Anxiety. Okay, what do I know about anxiety? Not much. I'm only joking. I won't fool around too much because it makes some people angry. But seriously, is this thing still going? Do I need to do anything with this?
I can't see.
It's blank. It's blank. It's gone blank.
Oh no!
Is the battery? The battery gone?
Anxiety.
It could be simple. I'm getting anxious about this.
No, I'm afraid not. It's just batteries only. Oh, it is going. It's actually still going. Its screen just turned off.
Oh, right, that's still cool. Anxiety. So if I put myself in other people's shoes, you know, like when I look at the experience of anxiety, you know, what am I actually, you know, going through? You know, it's completely obvious to most people. If I'm in an anxious state, you know, I could be tense, I could be fearful, I could be worried, concerned, maybe a sense of foreboding about things coming up in the future, or even things which could have happened in the past. You know, I could have done something even 5 years ago, which leaves me with this lingering anxiety, which has been going on for years, and it could have a genuine basis in worry or concern, or it could have a genuine basis in maybe an infraction of one's moral integrity, one's sila, and you know, so. All of us, you know, the vast majority of human beings are reasonably sensitive people. So, you're going to do things or things are going to happen to you, which is going to induce this state.
Of worry,
anxiety, and concern. So, you know, so how do I work with this? How do I deal with this? Say for example, this is a classic. A family came to the monastery. There was mum, her son, and his sister. And the young man had a real worry about ferocious dogs. He was, you know, when he was younger, he was attacked very very nasty attacked by a I think it might have been a Doberman pinscher, and the dog actually got hold of him. And he was just a young lad, maybe he was about 9 or 10, and the owner just couldn't get there quick enough. I think he maybe came onto somebody's property unannounced, and the dog sort of went for him and basically got a grip on him, and just scared the living daylights, you know, scared the hell out of him. And the owner managed to get out there quick enough before the guard dog did any damage, but from that point on, he was anything came along, Rottweiler, these kind of pig dogs, and any of these sort of worrisome, ferocious type of breeds that anyone would, you know, anyone might be a bit concerned about. Like, you know, I saw a couple just passing the temple today, and they had one of these it's almost like a mastiff, the kind of hunting breed. I don't know much about dogs, but that kind of category. And the couple were walking the dog. The dog were on a leash. It was just a bit paradoxical because I went for a walk down the road earlier, and I was almost I wouldn't say assaulted, but I was like at least 300 meters plus 350 meters away from the house, and these two little fluff balls came flying out, ran up the road. You know, I was several hundred meters away from the house, and just started harassing me. You know, I mean, there's no way you could have got anywhere near that. You couldn't have even got near the post box. You know, it was hilarious. But the little dogs were wagging their tails, so it was okay. But I reckon those little dogs would have run a mile when that pig dog came past. They wouldn't have had the guts to charge out, you know, at like 100 miles an hour with a dog like that when the owners were walking past. But anyway, but that state of anxiety, that young man had this for years afterwards, dead scared of any kind of hunting guard dog format. So, you know, how do we work with it? You know, if I'm in a situation where my buttons get pushed and I'm responding, and I respond, it could be quite genuine. The response could be very, very genuine. It could be based, like, in reality. Say, for example, if I was at home alone, and, you know, I could be male or female, somebody tries to break into my house at night when I'm asleep, and, you know, you can hear them coming in through the window, and, you know, it's you know, they're coming into your house, it's dark, you're alone, and you automatically feel afraid. You know, it's if you don't feel afraid, there's something wrong, and then you manage to get frighten the burglar off, get the police in, maybe make some security arrangements, changes with the dwelling, with doors and windows and whatnot. But you're living alone, and there's a criminal element in the local community, especially with drug users. You see increased break-ins, criminality, with increased drug abuse in the community. But the fact is that I'm dead. You know, I'm really afraid to live alone from that point. And and people in the street know, and local young people know, or even middle-aged people know that I'm in the house alone, and that tends to increase my worry and concern. So how am I going to work with something like that? It's a genuine experience, but it's emotionally it's quite painful. And so, you know, am I overreacting? So I look at this reality-based experience. Am I overreacting to the stimulus which is present? The thing that I'm concerned about. Am I responding, say, in a normal way, or am I completely going off the scale, and I'm almost shaking if I hear this, you know, if I hear like a noise, maybe the tree, like a branch bangs a window, or there's a possum on the roof, and then I'm almost paralyzed with fear, and I could even start shaking, I could start trembling, and which might be a little bit over the top, but people are very, very different, and you have to take them quite seriously. And so, you know, if I'm in that experience, what do I do? What I would do is, as soon as I see the anxiety, don't wait till the anxiety essentially snowballs you and takes you over. As soon as you see it, focus straight on your physical body, and look how you get affected by it. All strong anxiety has a physical component. And I'm going to use this as a bridge, as a way of understanding where I'm at, as a way of releasing and toning it, you know, helping to sort of tone it down. And focus right on the physical body. Scan the torso from the throat right down to your tummy, your abdomen. You know, where can I feel this anxiety? It could be in the middle of my chest. It could be right at the solar plexus. And as soon as you identify it, do that focusing principle. Focus there for a full 60 seconds. Because I want to work with this thing, I want to resolve it. And all psychological and emotional experiences can have a physical component. They affect the physical body. And so, for example, you can't feel it. Just imagine you can't feel it in the torso at all. You can't even feel it even around the neck, even around maybe even the back. Maybe one's shoulder blades get really, really tight, you know, really tense. I had one massage therapist tell me that she had a professional businessman who used to come into the clinic, on a one weekly appointment, and this guy was quite a reasonable fellow, But as soon as she touched this guy's neck, which was where all his tension was locked up, he would start getting really intense, and like he wouldn't shout, but she could feel that he was getting a bit like angry and irritated and annoyed, you know, because all this emotional tension was being locked up in the muscles in his neck. And as soon as she touched this guy's neck, you know, he would start to get quite emotionally like worked up, and she knew that there was a problem there. So if you can't see a basis in the physical body, because this is going to help you understand this thing, if you can't see anything at all in the physical body, then look at your feelings. You know, look inside your mind and look at the feelings, this feeling of anxiety. You know, don't grab hold of it or push it away. Just, you know, you're like, say, like a scientist or like a doctor. I'm trying to understand this experience, this emotion, and just gently just focus on it. Just focus and focus, just very relaxed, and then explore it using that focusing principle. And so, you know, just watch it. Just watch it. You know, don't judge it. Don't do anything with it. Just observe it. Just quietly if you can. And then after that 60-second principle, then start exploring it. And just explore it. Try to understand it. You know what this feeling. What is this feeling made of? How does it feel? What is it made of? And then once you, you know, once you run out of, once you've explored it a little bit, and then switch back to the, and then just focus gently on it again, that feeling, that emotional feeling, and then explore it a bit more deeply. You know, this feeling, who is it connected with, you know, and why and where and what for, what, you know, why do I even have this feeling, for what, and then explore it a bit more deeply, and then focus again. I always bring this thing up because this is like a physical, psychological, wisdom based meditative technique. This is why I always push this one, because this one will get you results. You do this long enough, you get good at this practice, and you'll definitely get results. You know, you get the book, and you'll understand very, very clearly why this particular approach works. Because, you know, people can go, you know, you'll definitely get very, very good quality counselors, psychologists, psychotherapists who can help you with your personal stuff, but my attitude is be your own therapist. And people tend to get very good results when you bring up like internal genuine insight within yourself. That will always get the best results. You're healing yourself from the inside out instead of the professional therapist from the outside in. Like, no one knows your feelings better than you do, because you are the one who is experiencing this experience. The reason why I use this body-based technique is because your body doesn't lie, doesn't deceive you as much as your mind can. You're connected with a certain person. It can be platonic or boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, and you feel a certain way about that person. But don't ever think that surface feeling is the true interpretation how you see and feel about that person. So for example, if I love someone, say for example, if I love my mum. I'm not going to say I love any girls connected with the monastery or anywhere else. This is being recorded, and you might put it on just for a laugh. But you can, if you want, you can do it for fun. It's okay, I can deal with it. But say for example, I love my mum, right? And then, but behind that tangible surface feeling, I, you know, like I love my mum for ulterior motives. My mum was always very nice to me, supportive, kind. You know, she never ever favoured my brother and spoiled him and neglected me. You know, the parents were very fair and, you know, this and that. And then, you can explore it, and there's all these underlying, these secondary underlying feelings why you have this heart-based emotion with mum and dad. You know, it's all this deeper stuff which is behind that primary feeling. So you've got that obvious, you know, primary feeling, how I feel about you. But behind that, there's all these secondary feelings, which is all this other deeper stuff, which is connected, you know, with that. And it all may be very genuine, very honest, and very, it could be quite wholesome and quite altruistic. But if you know, it's quite interesting, because the way you feel about people, there could be, like, you could have a dozen different feelings. The reason why you connect with that individual, whether it's male or female, and it can be completely plutonic, but there could be a dozen feelings why you like that person, why you admire that person, why you trust that person, and it can be quite interesting to explore these things, these experiences. So, so I think you've probably got enough information how to deal with that initially. Let's see, I'm trying to think of anything else at all. Another one is, yeah, this might be useful. For example, say you've got anxiety, you can use because anxiety is a painful feeling, or unpleasant painful feeling to a degree, depending on the individual. You can develop this very, very positive perception of this experience of oneself. So I identify all these worrisome, painful, concerning feelings, and I use the compassion mantra continuously, as you did previously. You did metta compassion together for several minutes, and so this one, you'd be very, very specific. May I be free from anxiety, worry, and fear. May I be free from concern. It could be anything. Any kind of associated unpleasant feeling. You can use one feeling, you can use two or three. May I be free. May I be free from anxiety. Anxiety is the primary feeling. May I be free from anxiety, worry, and fear. That could be a primary kind of mantra. You know, you can use any words which are important to you, but what I'm doing here is I'm bringing the mind back into a state of emotional balance. I've got this anxious feeling here, and then I use this kind of supportive, compassionate feelings, and I make this feeling, these supportive feelings, stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger, till it comes up and it balances and it overpowers this anxious, worrisome emotion that we have. That's another method you can use. Or another one may not work so well. Like anxiety, you can undermine the feeling. You can reduce the power of it. Like, you know, anxiety is empty. Anxiety is changeable. You can use these kind of mantras. So I keep undermining the power of that state, the influence, the intensity of that state. If I say this 100 times, 1,000 times, anxiety is empty, or anxiety is changeable. I'm affecting the way that I actually look at this experience. But sorry.
Could you use a negative? Anxiety is useless.
You could, if you think it works for you, if it's tangible, and it makes sense the way you perceive it. Then yeah, certainly do that, and just watch it. You know, this kind of stuff is very light. It may not be as effective as the other two techniques, but if the thing is, you know, if you're awake for 18 hours a day, you can say it to oneself every minute of the day or every couple of minutes. Anxiety is useless, anxiety is empty, whatever, and whatever's important to you. And then just watch the mind, how the mind responds.
Thank you,
no trouble at all. Question back?
Do you reckon it could help us with an addiction too?
It can.
I smoke cigarettes and I've given up quite a few times. And do you reckon a mantra could help that?
It can, because you're using, naturally cigarettes have both a physical and an emotional addiction, so you've used whatever mantra you can use to support yourself emotionally. May I be free from craving and addiction to cigarettes. That would just be a basic mantra. You use the words which are important for yourself. And then I undermine that feeling of addiction, that kind of mind state I have. I undermine the attachment, the power of the mind state with this supportive feeling.
I've given up quite a few times, but it's when I don't feel sugary, I give up. But when I feel physically really well, I want to smoke, and I'll follow this. If I could get over this addiction, I'll be all right. So I might use that mantra you just said.
See what you think.
Yeah.
But it does make people a little bit soft, but to make it just firm and strong, like just slowly, continuously, and it's more firm, because with the loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, these Brahma Vihara meditations, that emotionally will make you a little bit soft. So just make it strong, firm. Do it slowly, continuously.
Yeah. Thank you.
For as long as you like. Are we running out of time, Doug? Chant. Yep. All right. There's a couple of mantras you can do. I'll just mention the ones that I know. But you can source these mantras, and they may actually do a studio quality type representation. A couple of mantras you can use is the Tibetan. The Tibetan have a regular mantra that they use, and most of you would know it, the Om Mani Padme Hum mantra. And if I do it like sing-songy fashion, the way it goes is Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Mane Padme Hum, Om Mane Padme Hum, Om Mane Padme Hum. And that's Tibetan. And the Theravadan Mahayana mantra will be, and some of you come across it, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. So the easy way is, there must be dozens, possibly even 100 of these different kind of mantra forms. So you get on the internet and you dial in, could be something like Mahayana chanting mantras, or Tibetan chanting mantras, Theravadan chanting mantras. So you probably find dozens and dozens, and you must have very, 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 very clear sort of vocals, and you may find something that you quite like. Plus, you know, there's books where they've got hundreds of these mantras, and you may find one which is quite important, really, really resonates with you. And you know, they've got like small books with like God, hundreds of these things. But you may find it quite useful, especially if you're a person who's really, you just can't stop thinking. You're just thinking all the time, all day and half the night. So you use the mantra as an anchor. Instead of thinking about 100 things a minute or every couple of minutes, just think about, as you meditate, just do this very slow, relaxed kind of mantra formulation until you can get peaceful enough where you use the breath meditation. Or maybe a very spacious mantra.